for another Meet Me at the Diner. Today I have a super guest on the line. You may not know her because she's one of those behind-the-scenes type people that makes radio talk people look good. She is a person that I met in Washington, D.C., when I had the opportunity to interview Michael Harrison, the publisher of Talkers Magazine. And my first idea when I went to interview him was, as being number 505 on the list of heavy talkers, I thought maybe if I could impress him with my talents and move up the list a little bit. I think I made it to 450. But anyways, that's a story for another day. With him that day was this person that I met named Bernadette, and she kept telling me that I ought to try to bottle my laugh and sell it. Well, today she has written a book, and it is my great pleasure to have her on the radio with us today. How you doing, Bernadette?
Oh, Ann Eller, thank you so much for this invitation. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's really, really nice to have you on the air with us, and I was... I was just talking about Michael and how I met y'all, and then here it is 2 years later, and you've written a book, and it's an awesome book. I tell you what, it's Yappy Days Behind the Scenes with Newsers, Schmoozers, Boozers, and Losers, and I tell you what, you cover all of those very well in the book, Bernadette.
Correct. Sometimes one host has all those qualities.
Exactly. In fact, I had, before we got started, I had a little clip I wanted to play for you or just read from your book. It says, this is the story of what it's like to be on the front line in the hot seat of a job known as talk show producer, dealing with dramas, egos, guests, and time crunching with the likes of Larry King, Lou Dobbs, Sally Jesse Raphael, Tom Snyder, Charles Osgood, and others. In reality, it was like the guy who used to spin the plates atop the poles of the old Ed Sullivan Show. All I could do when I read that was think about watching that and that music, and so I had to go find it for you.
Oh, Ann, thank you so much, even though that's brought up a lot of post-trauma for me, but thank you.
Well, anyways, I've thought so much about how to talk about your book and everything. It's so exciting. But, you know, I'm always curious as to how a person gets into this field. And when you were growing up, what did you want to be?
Well, I was a daughter of an immigrant Irish mother in a neighborhood, Queens, New York, where there were a lot of immigrants. And I think that my mom wanted to become more American, and her way was to have the radio on in the house all the time. So I grew up listening to radio, and we had one in every room, and you would go from room to room to room and hear all these magnificent voices, and it just became part of my family culture. These were people who were part of my family, extended family. So I naturally felt when it came time for getting an internship in college, I applied for some jobs, and lo and behold, I landed in a local station where my favorite host, Sally Jesse Raphael, was working, and I had an opportunity to work with her.
And, you know, what else is so interesting, though, is when you were growing up and you were a teenager, you actually wrote her a fan letter.
I did. I was such a nerdy kid. While all my friends were writing fan letters to Bobby Sherman or Rod Stewart, I'm writing to this talk show host. But Sally was magical. She was part fairy godmother and part rascal. And to have that feeling, you know, and that's what you do. You know that laughter I pointed out to you that you need to bottle?
Right.
It's so infectious, and she infected me with this magic that it changed my life.
Well, and well, then how is it that you got a job to work with her? And how did you feel, though? Were you really nervous? Did you feel starstruck? Or
did all the above? Because after all, I was a young kid, and while I knew the station, I knew the local station, I still did not know how it operated. So those first few years in that business, in our business, I was learning the ropes, and I came to realize so much of it was people skills.
And what did you major in when you were in college?
I was a journalism, English, Spanish major. And again, there's that little theme going. Sally Jessy Raphael spent a lot of time in Puerto Rico, you know, so she had a little bit of influence.
I guess so. That's pretty neat. Well, as you, one of the things I thought was so interesting is that you really, you like the human aspect of it, and Sally Jessy Raphael was the Dear Abby of her time?
That would be a great way to describe her, yes. She was the, your wise woman and neighbor over the fence that you feel like you could call up in the middle of the night if you were having any kind of personal problem. And she didn't necessarily feel like she had all the answers. Sometimes she said, I don't know, and she would open it up to the callers, and the callers would come up with their own answers.
Was that the one about the horse in Alaska?
Believe it or not, we got the most amazing phone call. And when you're a producer, you go through all these phone calls per hour, and it could be as many as 100. And I stopped dead in my tracks when this woman from Alaska called up and asked the question, what do I do with a dead horse in my front yard? And I did not think Sally would know what to do, but I knew she would run with this and just have a ball with it. And again, Anne, you're a master of this. It's theater of the mind.
Yep.
You have that skill, and I know your listeners know that too. It's theater, and you're creating these visuals that your listener conjures up. And that particular phone call, could you imagine a dead horse on your front lawn?
In Alaska, wasn't it in Alaska?
Yes.
Yes? I mean, no, nonetheless, in Alaska. Yeah.
Right. For the whole thing. I mean, that was a showstopper enough that it was a call from Alaska. But, you know, what a situation.
And, you know, I think the other thing that's interesting is she took calls on all different things, whether it was somebody trying to figure out how to pop the question, right?
That's correct.
I mean, she didn't mind delving in. But the other thing about Sally Jessy Raphael that I found very interesting from your book, Yappy Days, was that she didn't mind just taking off, and she had this huge extended family, and they just travel. She'd just give up a job and go for the next one.
You got that right. And that's part of the fairy godmother nature of her, and rascal, you see what I mean?
Yep.
She shot for answers. She was so connected with, one of her sayings was, life is a smorgasbord, and most people are starving to death.
You know,
to this day, all her Sally-isms, we used to call them, I collected them on the side, they are with me today. They probably wired me through my experience as a talk show producer.
You know, that's very interesting, because in today's world, one of the things that radio is so good with is connecting people, and particularly with the voice. And, you know, as social media gets bigger and bigger, we lose some of that, don't we?
Oh, I love that you point that out. My husband, Michael, and you know Michael, we often talk about community. And that, to that point, the social media, and as you know, because it's a constant topic of conversation, people getting distracted by social media, and they're not talking to their neighbor. They're not connecting with their family members. You know, you could see people at a restaurant, and they're not even talking to one another because they're each on their phone texting.
Yep. And you can see a whole family sitting at a table and nobody talking to each other.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think, and it's, you know, the time frame that we're talking about, that you were a producer, was what time in history?
We're talking 1983 through 2009 was my entire career experience in talk radio.
So it was kind of a different time.
I like to break that period down into the pre-9/11 radio and then post-9/11 radio, because 9/11 is the big marker.
It was a big marker in your life.
Pardon me?
I said it was a big marker in your life.
It was a big marker, right, in all of our lives.
Yeah.
But then those of us in our business recognize the pre-9/11, and, you know, that was the default from O.J. Simpson, where we were chasing stories like JonBenet Ramsey, the young six-year-old mm-hmm. beauty queen. And remember Congressman Gary Condit out of California, and he was tied to the missing intern Chandra Levy?
Right, right.
And then another story, Andrea Yates, the mother who was mentally ill, who was unfortunately drowned her children.
Right.
These were the stories that morning. And then by 9 o'clock that morning, everything flipped. And for the next couple of decades, but definitely the next decade of my life, I only dealt with terrorism. And on a daily basis, and sometimes 3 hours a night. So,
but that had to be tough, Bernadette. I mean, you know, here you were. You moved. Now we're skipping all around here, but you moved back to New York. You were out in California, right?
That's correct.
And you were living on a houseboat. I love this part of your book, by the way. You were living on a houseboat. And before we get into 9/11, you had been working with Tom Snyder, and that show ended. You decided you needed a break from the world. You were leaving New York, and you headed west to California.
Correct. Just like a lot of our colleagues in the business, like Rush Limbaugh left the business, Glenn Beck left the business. People leave the business, but if you're a true radio rat, if you're a true addict,
yes,
you come crawling back. And 9/11 rose that aspect of my personality. I came crawling back to New York, and I did anything to get back into the business, which means freelancing, doing all sorts of wacky hours, and I made it back.
And you did make it back, and that was so good that you did that. But you got to tell the people what you did in California, because that is just an awesome story unto itself. I mean, what were you doing out there?
Well, again, you know, don't let anybody lie to you who's in radio and tell you that they want a bigger job, whether it's in TV or movies. And I did get a $10 an hour job with a movie production company. But then I landed a really cool TV job with Judge Mills Lane, one of those Judge Judy type shows.
Yeah, and what was he? He was a charismatic former boxer referee turned judge.
Was he ever? Yes. And very theatrical. I mean, remember Bald Headed Man?
Yeah.
So much fun, and a gentleman, a true gentleman, and they taped out of New York, but I was. I had the job of tracking down the people who went on the show, but I would go to all the courthouses in Beverly Hills, Hollywood, and I became a regular in all these courthouses and found guests that they would pop on the show. They would fly them to New York.
Oh, my goodness, all the way to New York? Wow.
Yes, where the show was taped.
And so, you know, I would expect, absolutely, that this could be an exciting book unto itself, Bernadette.
It was an eye-opener, I have to admit, because when you see some of the wacky small claims cases, and that's the courthouse I visited all over that part of California, and I'm talking about crazy things like people suing because of a bone in a boneless steak, or people suing because of check this one out. The bra strap that was eating away at this claimant's bone, shoulder. Just wacky. And there was even a day when I was in a courthouse in Hollywood when a woman came in and said, hey, is any of those producers from the court shows here? Because I have a story for them. The genre of reality TV became that big that people actually showed up at the courthouse asking for folks like me.
Well, you know, one of my other thoughts, reading your book, I mean, you've got so many details of so many good stories and everything, and we can't cover all of them, nor do we want to, because we want you to get your own copy of Yappy Days. That's the deal, behind the scenes with newsers, schmoozers, boozers, and losers. But did you keep a journal of all this stuff that you've put in this book, or how did you remember it all?
I did keep a journal. That is, I was a writer. Even at the age of 17, I was actually selling stories, nothing big, but fun stories to 17 magazine. So I got in the habit of writing, pitching stories, and I guess I wired my brain to think about taking notes. I'm constantly taking notes, and it's sort of embarrassing. I'm with my friends, and they'll start talking about their favorite book, and I'll start taking notes about it. You know, just the way I became wired.
Yeah. Well, you also in the book, one of the things of being a producer, radio producer, is that you have to read a tremendous amount, and you're constantly chasing stories and trying to find that perfect guest for that talk show host that night.
Correct. Or the big challenge, worse than that, Anne, is when there's no news. And you have to come up with something, make something out of nothing.
Right.
But take a case like O.J. Simpson, a story that for us lasted 133 days. And there's a case where you want to focus on a new angle. For 133 days in a row, I had to come up with a new expert, a new angle, a new debate. You know, it was, let's say you really... You work out your creative juices.
Now, where were you living at that time when O.J. Simpson was going on?
I was in New York City.
Okay.
And I was working at CBS Radio Networks with Gil Gross.
Oh, wow. Okay. And so to keep up with that, I mean, it was kind of like the TV. I mean, you know, you'd see it on TV. But did you ever feel as a producer that people were tired of hearing about it?
I can imagine that they were, and yet I think we're all attracted to the gruesome, messy parts of life, and sometimes because,
are you there? We lost Bernadette. I tell you what, you stay right here. Isn't this fascinating stuff here this afternoon? I told you this was going to be a good show. Yappy Days, behind the scenes with newsers, schmoozers, boozers, and losers. We're talking about the gruesome details of the O.J. Simpson case with Bernadette Duncan. We'll have her back on the line in just a moment. Don't you go away.
They say every kiss begins with... But at Sharp Facets Gallery, every smooch begins with Sharp Facets Gallery. Which do you want? A little kiss or a big smooch? I'll bet a big smooch. So shop Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood, for rock bottom prices and smoochable results.
Want to get your name out there? Then advertise with us, WCRS. It's the way the game is played, and we've got the listener just for you. That's WCRS 98.5. You can hear it. Call us today, 229-7984. Hey! That's my rap song just for you right here on WCRS.
Through modern technology, we are reconnected again with Bernadette Duncan Harrison right here on WCRS. Her book, Yappy Days, Behind the Scenes with Newsers, Schmoozers, Boozers, and Losers, is a great read. It's an easy read, and it's one that actually I had a problem. I'll tell you, Bernadette, I had a real problem. I kept skipping around in the book. I had a problem reading it front to back because I'd go, oh, that looks real interesting, and I'd read that chapter, and then finally I read it in order.
Funny. I guess it's all ways of skinning this book, huh?
Yeah. Well, you know, you're just looking and you go, oh, I like that chapter. Let me read that one. And that's one of the things about the book, folks, that you will just love, because not only does it have a lot of behind the scenes, but it has a lot of good stories about some of the famous people that we all know. Like, for example, there's stories about Rush Limbaugh. That's an interesting one. And the change that he went through, Bernadette, through life, from you knowing him as a younger man through what, 2011, 2012, even now?
Correct, Anne. I had met Rush Limbaugh back in 1991 when I was a producer with a local newspaper radio show in New York. And Rush was on the air on a network about 2 years by that point, about, and he had about 50 affiliates, and his numbers in New York, which is known to be very liberal, his numbers in New York City were fantastic. So the local New York Daily News said, go down, meet with him, and see what you can find out. Get a vibe on him. So I did a profile on him, and I met a man, a kind of boy-faced, 320-pound, 5'11" man, and that is the person I would say I call that Rush Limbaugh 1.0. And he was a gentleman. He wore a tie to a radio station, and
wow.
I don't know any guys other than those in management, but any of the on-air guys don't wear ties. And then fast forward a couple more years, I would see Rush at conventions, the Talkers New Media Convention, and by this point, he had a TV show, he had a lot of books out, and you could say that he was surfing pretty high. He was doing quite well for himself, and by this point, he had lost a lot of weight, and I think he had lost a couple of wives, meaning, you know, he'd been through a couple. And then Rush Limbaugh 3.0, the man I met about 3 years ago or so, looked a little weathered, actually kind of downbeaten. Mm-hmm. And he's now traveling with a bodyguard.
What a
and
change.
It was such a lesson in the wealth of life. And sometimes you lose a lot of you know, your personal freedom.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And he is, but he's still out there talking every day, and he still has his, let's see, behind the EIB golden mic.
Isn't that the truth? And basically, as everyone knows in our business, he saved the AM dial. I mean, thanks to him, a lot of us are still in this business because he's brought so many advertisers to this business and a lot of attention.
Absolutely.
So he's all right in my book.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, he's right here on WCRS, so I wanted to mention him because I knew some of our Rush listeners would like to read what you wrote about him in the book. But one of the other things, you know, we kind of ended on O.J. Simpson, but getting into 2001, September 11th, when you went back to New York, You felt, didn't you, the terror of the whole area. In fact, I think I remember reading a story where a trash can went down the street and everybody thought it was a bomb or something.
And it was an amazing experience to be back in New York. Things like that would happen and everybody on the street would just stop in their tracks. Another time, I'm walking down the street, and a loud airplane overhead was passing. And I'll never forget, these gentlemen on the same sidewalk, not too far from me, they stopped, looked up, and then we all started to comment on the tragedy of, you know, a few months earlier. The we were all suffering in this city with post-trauma.
Yeah. And so I guess a lot of things developed out of that with talk radio, I would think. But I was fascinated by the search for the different guest at that time. And the one that you found, what was it, Walid Showboat?
Yes, Walid.
Yes.
Shubat was his name. You know, sometimes you have to take a lot of risks as a talk show producer. Because I was covering terrorism every day, I stretched. I would take chances. As long as I told the host, okay, listen, you know, a couple of questionable issues concerning this guest, do you want to take this chance? But here's why I think we may want to do this. I took a chance on this gentleman. He was very secretive. I checked out his background, and nobody was putting him on the air. And I did not know why, but I had opportunity to pre-interview him.
Right.
And he was credible, but I was ready for anything. I get him on the air. He would not come in studio because he was, he did claim to be a former terrorist who changed, was extremely horrified by his own misguided behavior, and now he was talking it out. Well, what happened that day was while he's on the air doing an interview, at one point, and you know what it's like to be a producer, you're running the board, you're screening calls, anything could be going on. You're watching for bulletins on your computer. And on this day, at this moment, he breaks into a foreign language, a Middle Eastern language. And I'm like, what? So I pulled him off the air. I just totally yanked his connection, and I could hear the host saying, Walid, are you there? And I jump on the line with him, and I said, Walid, English, you have to speak English. This is an English-speaking show. I was horrified because in my mind, and by this time I'd been covering terrorism for months, in my mind I was thinking how if four men on an airplane can hijack an airplane and all those lives with box cutters, then what might this man be saying on the air? Could he be saying something that might be unleashing, you know, cells around the country? We were walking around very fragile.
Right. That's why I like that story, because that, you know, but the biggest thing about it, I mean, you may have lost your cool, like, speak English, and he's going, what? He didn't even realize he wasn't speaking English in the story, did he?
Correct.
Yeah.
I did not get into his head on that matter.
Right.
All I know is that I did sense an innocence about his behavior, and time proved this man to be a man of his word and what he did present himself as, because subsequent to me putting him on the air, I had seen him on other shows, on television, and then he actually was blogging for a while, and actually I've seen him on even current shows I've seen him on. So it's kind of neat to know that sometimes you take a chance,
right?
And it worked out great.
Yeah, and you do take a chance, and, you know, it could have gone the other way. It's just great it went the way it did. And one of the things I was very interested about was how you were interviewing guests that call into the shows and how you had to shuck them out to find the right guests to put on the shows. I mean, that's a talent unto itself, Bernadette.
I suppose it is. The opportunity to pre-interview a guest is great. So, for example, on Tom Snyder's radio show, I spent a lot of time pre-interviewing a guest, like even the actress Catherine. she was on the JAG show, Catherine
right.
Bell. Now, here's a very well-known actress at that time, and by speaking to her and pre-interviewing her, I found out that she spoke Persian. She was born in London, had a scar on her neck that she never covers because she thinks a scar is cool, and she was studying Scientology. Tom Snyder loved this. It was that kind of like that underbelly detail that you don't read about even in People magazine necessarily. And he just loved Catherine Bell. It was just a lot of fun.
Yeah, and then, of course, there was the time you had Joe Behar on Tom Snyder.
Oh, yes. Yes. You had to bring that one up. Yeah, it was one of those moments where she shows up at CBS, and she showed up with two dogs, her dogs. And the receptionist called me up in the studio, which was normal, and she said, I can't let your guest up because we don't allow dogs up into the studio. And I'm thinking, what? And why is Joy Behar bringing her dogs? And I'm thinking, but I had no idea what I was going to say. I said, now, wait a second. I'm trying to convince the receptionist, please make an exception to the rule. Well, she still refused. I said, okay, we're coming right down. I'm going to work it out with you. I got downstairs. I still had no idea what I was going to say, but I knew I was going to get Joy Behar up onto the sixth floor. And I got down and spoke to the receptionist. I looked her in the eye, and I said, out of the blue, I lied to her, and I said, please, today is my birthday, and I can't have one more thing go wrong. Well, she looked me in the eye and started to laugh. She said, today's my birthday, too. And she leaned back, and she said, all right, I'll let Joy up with her dogs, but if anything happens up there, you better clean it up. So it all worked out, and it became one of those stories that I got to talk about.
Yeah. I mean, you know, just you. Those are the things. But, you know, if you hadn't been able to have that quick mind and think of something that just happened to turn out to be perfect.
Yeah, it's. I guess it's one of the talents of an ever-growing up producer. You know, you just do what you can to deal with the clock and get your guest on in time in front of a microphone, and you just do what you can. And you know that.
Yeah, I know that. But, you know, it's fun for people to hear it from the other side because this isn't the glory position that you work in. You work behind the scenes to make sure that talk show host looks good, sounds good, and has the information.
Correct. We are known to be the most underrated, underpaid, underappreciated in the media, and we learn a separate kind of language with our hosts. You learn how to translate even the twitch, you know, an eye twitch. You'll just jump because you figure it out. Oh, that must mean blah, 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 and you just figure it out.
Yeah. Well, that's true. And you know, you have to be so flexible in this job. I mean, like, take the example of, what was the guy's name? Louis Black, the comedian?
Correct.
Yes, and he had an hour-long interview, and what, after 20 minutes or something, he said, I'm out of here?
Yeah. All of a sudden, he's standing up, he leans into the microphone, and he says to me, thank you, this has been great. Could you send this interview, the first 10 minutes, to all the other stations that I had promised that he would be on with, because I was doing what's called a satellite tour, where I lined up a lot of stations to speak to him, and he started to walk out the studio door. I go tearing after him. I said, Mr. Black, you don't do that. You have to stay. You're scheduled for another 40 minutes. Well, when he finally explained, look, I got to get my laundry, I'm on an airplane in an hour and a half, I got to get going, the button on my shirt popped off, and I need to get a pair of white sneakers. Well, I get him back onto the chair, I call the laundry, and I said, the cleaners, and I said, please, can you guys deliver his laundry? I found out where he can get his size 13 sneakers, and I sat there, needle and thread, because I work in radio, and we have everything. You know, we come with everything.
Right.
And I sewed his button back on, and, of course, had to explain that one to my boss when he walked by.
I mean,
but you do what you can, right? That's what, you know, you never know what's going to come up.
That's right. And that's what being in radio is, and, you know, and I guess in a lot of aspects, television, too. But there's so much behind the scenes that I think people would thoroughly enjoy your book, you know, Yappy Days, because they do get a glimpse of what goes on behind the scenes. And when things go out and you have to just carry on, or a guest is supposed to be there and they don't show up and everything has been planned around this, and then a good talk show host can just go on, but if they're not there, if the host or if the guest isn't there, it can really create a problem.
Yes, if you make it into a problem, but remember, right, our business is about having fun. Relay the information, but do it for fun. Do stuff for fun.
I know, but there's a lot of them out there that don't, Bernadette.
Isn't that the truth?
Yes. And they're so serious, and they take themselves so seriously, they forget that it is entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's a large part of it. But then on the other side, you have all these guests to deal with. Like, let's see, what was one of them? Joan Rivers? There was an interesting one that you handled again.
Yeah, there's nothing like placing a phone call to Joan Rivers at 6:55 in the morning and having, let's just say, one of those wonderful four-letter words come flying at you, because she wasn't in love with certain aspects of the interview I set up. And it was a little intimidating.
But then you, at the very last minute, you just pulled out and a name, and you and she were great friends.
Yes, the funny thing was that we bonded eventually. I kind of, you know, you have to also tame, whether you tame the host or you tame a guest. I figured, okay, she's going to give me the F-bomb, and that's what it was. She gave me the F-bomb, and I figured, okay, let me just sit through this, get her on the air, walk her through, you know, smoother during commercial breaks, and then I sort of said, about 10 minutes before the end of the hour, I said, oh, by the way, you and I have a mutual friend. And I mentioned a man, David Bernstein, who hired her at the local radio station. You know, she was a radio talk show host here locally, and I could hear the change of tone in her voice. Suddenly, we were friends.
Yeah.
And we ended those last 10 minutes, but I kind of got the last laugh in that one, at least to me. You know, it's like you never know who you're messing around with. Don't throw these F-bombs at someone like me. I'm working so hard.
I'm working my butt off here, lady.
You got that right.
Yeah, there you go. And let's see, then... The time that you had all, and you dealt with, I wasn't really sure I understood at the latter part of the book, but you would book people, I guess, on satellite, and you'd book them with all these different talk show hosts, and the guest would be sitting there, and they would plug them into all these different talk show hosts?
It's an interesting genre of being a producer, and the idea is that you're a shadow producer. I would be working in the shadows of stations around the country, and I would get a guest, pop them into a studio, and every 10 minutes, these affiliated stations would plug in, and they would get 10 minutes with the same guest. So it's one way that the PR aspect of radio and television, it's one way that they got a lot of bang for their buck. Mm-hmm. They brought their talent, their guest, into a studio, and for 2 hours, this guest is talking all over the country, and they never had a sweat, you know. I was bringing them to all my affiliated stations.
Yeah, and I like some of the names of these hosts. let's see, pond scum, smelly belly, mornings, you put them in the morning zoo. I mean, there are some very interesting terms in there, Bernadette.
Oh, you're so funny. Yes, you're reminding me of the wonderful experience I had with former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright. You're laughing. Basically, in my enthusiasm, which in this experience got me in trouble, I figured, okay, this is the former Secretary of State, Madeleine Albright, who I admired, because how many times would you get a woman, you know, face-to-face with Ahmadinejad?
Right.
And she was out promoting her book,
by Pin Stories from...
Yes,
something like that, yes.
A wonderful book about the jewelry box from which she would choose her pins that would be chosen in light of which world leader she was going to be meeting with. And I figured, well, the more stations I get her on, the better. Well, she looked at the rundown list, looked at me, and she's like, what is this? Because she saw those names that you just described, pond scum, smelly belly. And these guys are wild FM morning zoo hosts. They're shock jocks.
Right.
And in the factory mindset that can happen when you're doing this for almost 30 years, I make mistakes every once in a while, right?
Yeah.
Just like anybody else. And I realized in that moment, oh, no. This is the former Secretary of State, Madeleine Albright, and I am feeding meat to the lions here. And you cannot control the zoos, the morning shock jocks. Well, lo and behold, she hadn't yet put her headset on, and I can hear the audio through my headset. I hear a guy, Smelly Belly, say, you know what, our next guest coming up is Madeleine Albright. And frankly, we should get more broads like her over in you know, that heated in the Middle East, and maybe we'll get contain Al-Qaeda. And I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, I'm in big trouble. And 10 minutes later, that was it. She got up. She stood up, didn't even look me in the eye, and just walked out.
Yeah.
And I was devastated, to be honest with you. I felt, well, what can I tell you? I felt terrible. I still do.
Right. And yet, when, in the story, when she looked at the list, you said, but you want to sell books, don't you? You want to sell more books. I've lined you up with people that will be hearing you all over the country. I can see it from your perspective, too.
Well, you're kind. This is a woman of great gravitas.
Yep.
And I guess she was a very good guest. And this was definitely a case where I messed up.
Yeah. But you went on.
Oh, yes.
And then...
you survived.
That's
it's
right.
Just yet another great story.
Yeah, and you wrote that one down so you'd have it for this book here today, Yappy Days, Behind the Scenes with Newsers, Smoozers, Boozers, and Losers. One more story, you got to tell me about Dr. Laura Schlesinger on the nude photo gate. I mean, I thought, you know, I like talking about nude stuff on my morning show, so I thought, my God, this is perfect.
Okay, so you're going to have me revisit that one, huh?
Yeah, because I think that's another good one, too.
Yeah, Dr. Laura, as you know, has had a lot of books out, and by this point, she had already made it to some of those tabloid newspapers because of her, let's say, nude pictures.
That her ex-boyfriend.
I avoided booking her for years because she had a very bad reputation. But now this is when management came over and said, please, please get her on some stations, and we will be grateful. But whatever you do, don't talk about you-know-what. And we all knew what you-know-what meant. Well, lo and behold, that morning, it was all I could do to contain some of these same guests. And, of course, she gets angry at me. She's micromanaging me. And
she's sending you little messages, right, saying change this guest order and all this kind of stuff, right?
Yes, it was brutal, and I'm glad that she was 3,000 miles away. She was in California. We were texting, I guess it's called Yahoo communication. Mm-hmm. So she's IMing me from 3,000 miles away. But you know what? This lady has a backbone, because at one point, one of the hosts that I connected her with had set up a phony call, to Dr. Laura, a woman who said, you know, my boyfriend posted new pictures of me on the air. And I'm thinking, oh, on online. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, they are making fun of her. And all I can tell you, she was typing mad messages to me. And we got her off the show. I disconnected her from the show, and I asked her, hey, do you need a little break or anything after this? And she says, no, let's keep charging ahead. And with that, I knew this woman is a strong lady, and it speaks to a lot of her strengths and what made her a great talk show host.
Yeah, exactly. Because you have so many great people in there. I mean, you work for Larry King.
In fact, I did. Yes, I was a fill-in producer. Larry, who had been married, I think he was on wife number 5, so he had just divorced. Yes, I worked with him on and off when he came to New York for about 6 years.
Yeah. So there's, I mean, I don't want to spoil the book. I mean, I want people to read the book, but there's some great stories in there about that. Your relationship with Lou Dobbs, it was a little problematic, and I'm impressed that you stuck it out as long as you did.
Thank you, Ann. I appreciate that. I hope that he might have good memories, too. But let's just say some of these folks, Larry and Lou, as you just mentioned, have a reputation that preceded them.
Yeah.
And let's just say I grew up and got a lot of lessons, too.
Yeah. And so now what does the future hold for Bernadette here? You're married, you're having a blast, but what future projects, things you're thinking about?
Well, Anne, as you know, I'm married to a great man, our industry's friend. He's a media theorist, and my day-to-day life is almost like a talk show. It's very dynamic. And as I say to Michael all the time, not a day goes by when I'm not laughing. Every day I laugh. And this is a man who can probably sing every kind of hit song because he came out of music radio, but he also was a dynamo in the talk business, subsequently as the publisher and founder of Talkers.
Right.
So...
Well, he certainly is, and you certainly have had oodles and oodles of experience. I mean, you went to Israel just on a real quick, they just said, come on, we're going to Israel, basically.
Yes, an opportunity beyond belief, because, of course, that you know, Israel and the Middle East is always in the news, and it was an opportunity to get a firsthand understanding of the dynamics. And it was quite an experience for a producer.
And but it was just like 96 hours or something, wasn't it?
Yes. In New York, 96 hours, because we packed in 18-hour days of meeting and greeting mayors of all the different cities and just running around. It was a number of talk show hosts that I joined on that mission.
Absolutely. You know, you're listening to WCRS right here in Greenwood. You know, I think it's terrific. But I'm curious, you know, did you ever want to be a talk show host yourself?
I did not. Well, maybe I have, but I'd like to tell you that it's been so long ago. I will confess that after NBC Radio Networks at the end of like 4 o'clock in the morning, when I had to play back the hours, there were a couple of nights when me and one of the other engineers sat in the studio and we took our own phone calls and we did our own talk show. So I've had the experience of just talking to people.
Right.
And this is this little opportunity with you. You're a talk show host, and I know that I'm a great support system. I'm a great co-pilot, and I'm very happy to have had that experience.
Well, thank you very much, but I think you would be a good talk show host because you have empathy and you care and you can size things up, and that's really, really important for a talk show host, too.
Well, Anne, I don't have a laugh like you. And I'm telling you, Anne, you must bottle that.
All right, well, I'll be contacting you and we'll figure out a way to do it. How about that?
Sounds good to me.
Bernadette Duncan Harrison, you have written a fabulous book. I certainly hope our listeners will take the opportunity to read this book and get this book, Yappy Days Behind the Scenes with Newsers, Schmoozers, Boozers, and Losers. And you can get it at Amazon. It's a downloadable on Kindle, and it's just a fun book, and the pictures in the back are great. And please say hello to Michael and tell him that I've thoroughly enjoyed this, and thanks so much for joining us today, Bernadette.
Thank you, Anne. It was my greatest pleasure. I appreciate it.
All right. You have a good one.
And you too.
Bye-bye. All right, well, there you go. Yappy Days, Bernadette Duncan Harrison, right here on WCRS. It's a great read. I hope you'll take the opportunity to read it. It's an easy read, 239, 240 pages, and it is jam-packed with good stuff for you to know and create a lot of good conversation. Thanks so much for being here, everybody. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody.